As soon as the snow starts falling later this year in Wisconsin, you're sure to see the roads and sidewalks peppered with salt. But we're now learning there may be an environmental cost to using salt as our main de-icing agent.
Hillary Dugan joins us now. She's a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Limnology, and she co-authored a recent study that shows road salt is increasingly finding its way into our lakes. Hillary, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, can you tell us first about this study? What were you looking to get a handle on?
Yeah, so it's been, we've known for a long time that it's been an environmental concern that road salt is going to run off into our fresh waters, be that streams, lakes, groundwater. What was unique about our study was that we looked at a really large geographical extent spanning the U.S. Midwest all the way to the Northeast and found that a lot of lakes across this entire region were increasing in chloride over sort of a decadal time period.
And chloride is?
Chloride is sort of one half of road salt. So once road salt hits water, it dissolves into both sodium and chloride. And so we track chloride trends through time.
And how did you get a handle on that about finding out over the decades? Because I can't imagine that this was something that would have been tracked super specifically if you go back 20, 30, 40 years.
So getting our hands on long-term data was the most difficult aspect of the study. We're lucky here in Wisconsin that there's the university itself and the Department of Natural Resources has done a really great job tracking some of these environmental contaminants over time. And so we can see that long-term change.
And one of the things that matters when you're looking at these lakes and bodies of waters is the surfaces that surround them. And the term in the study is impervious. Are there impervious surfaces around the lake?
Right.
Can you describe what that is and what that might look like?
Yeah, so an impervious surface is anything that water is not going to get through. So that's usually roads or parking lots that we're talking about. And what we found was that any lake that had as little as 1% impervious surface around its shoreline was really at risk for these long-term chloride trends.
So that's not a very high percentage, 1%.
Very low, yeah. So if you see a lake that has a road running alongside it, so basically if you can drive by a lake, it's probably getting road salt runoff if you're in a region of the country that's applying road salt.
So if we're looking at Wisconsin, how many lakes are we talking about that have, you know, roads around them that are going to see that kind of runoff?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, we only actually had 11 lakes in our data set with long-term data, but we know that there's, you know, tens of thousands of lakes in this state. And we can do that calculation of how many lakes have roads along them. And it's upwards of 30% in some areas. And so a lot of lakes are at risk for these long-term changes.
And you were getting at the scale of this, a large-scale, long-term study. Can you talk about the importance of long-term data collection on how the UW fits into this big picture?
Yeah, so long-term data collection is incredibly important. I mean, we wouldn't know about these changes if we didn't know that the baseline concentrations were a lot different than what they are today. And it also allows us to track how well our changing practices are going to sort of help remediate these lakes. So as we become more knowledgeable about the environmental impacts, we've started to change how we apply road salt. Cities and municipalities and states have done a really great job at trying to improve how they lay down road salt. And with long-term data, we'll be able to see the effect of that and know, you know, what we're doing is working.
So you found that when there were these impervious surfaces around the lakes, that the salinity, it goes up. So what does that mean for the lakes themselves?
Yeah, I think there's two main components. The first is that a lot of lakes are used as drinking water sources. So at a certain point in time, we're going to be able to start tasting the salt, which is pretty unpleasant. And it's incredibly expensive to remove salt from water. Almost no drinking water plants are set up to do that. And so in Madison, for instance, we're having a problem with chloride levels in our groundwater. And at a certain point, you just have to stop using those wells if they keep rising. The second point is that chloride affects aquatic species living in lakes. And so you might start seeing changes in algae that are adapted to more salty conditions. And that has ramifications through the food web.
And what about the density of the life that's in the lake? Does that get affected too?
Yeah, it definitely has an impact on biodiversity, and so you might just start seeing the loss of species over time. And what we're worried about is that as you increase salinity, you might leave these habitats more favorable for invasive species and sort of giving a leg up to exotic species.
Can you give us a sense of the levels of salinity that you found in various lakes? I know the study in specific mentioned a lake that I've canoed on, Lake Wingra, and I thought the level was surprising there. What else did you see here in Wisconsin and beyond?
Yeah, so Lake Wingra is a great example. It's a pretty shallow lake, and the baseline concentrations of lakes around the Madison area probably should be about 1 to 2 milligrams per liter. And Winger is now over 100, so it's increased 100 times in its salinity of what it should be. Lake Mendota is another example, but it's a much deeper lake, and so it's increased about 50 times what it was. So it really depends on the lake depth. You can imagine that sort of the bigger the lake, the more buffered it might be from some of these contaminants. But even the Great Lakes are seeing increases in chloride from road salt, which is pretty amazing given the volume of those lakes.
And what about the rest of the lakes that you surveyed? Because this was this big scope here from lakes in Wisconsin all the way over to the Northeast. How did the rest of the lakes fare?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely dependent on size. I think Wisconsin, we're lucky because we have a lot of big lakes in the state, and a lot of lakes in the northern half are pretty remote. But in areas in the Northeast that are really urban, almost all of the small lakes were in danger of sort of these long-term trends. The Twin Cities is another good example. So in Minnesota, where there's a lot of small lakes right in the city, and almost all of those have much higher concentrations than we're seeing here in Madison.
Hillary Dugan is with us now, researcher at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, and we're talking about a recent study that she co-authored showing that road salt is increasing the salinity of our freshwater lakes. And so when we have this information in our back pocket now, what do we do with it? How do we make a change?
Yeah, I think we need to be more cognizant of how we apply road salt. And so for the most part, we think of road salt being put down by cities, and cities are aware that this is an environmental concern, and they're trying to balance public safety with the environment, but also their budgets. So, you know, if they're going out and there's ways to use less road salt, they're going to be all for that because it saves them money in the long run. I mean, we spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars in the state just on road salt. But what I think people aren't really appreciating is just how much road salt's put down by private citizens and businesses. So people clearing their own sidewalks or businesses clearing parking lots. And these are often contracted out. And that's where you get, that's where you see sort of piles of road salt lying around. And you have to be aware that really you only need a sort of a handful of road salt to effectively melt ice on, you know, a square meter of sidewalk. And so we don't, if you see a pile of salt laying around, that's definitely too much salt. And so just on a sort of person-to-person basis, have to be more aware of how we applied this privately.
Is there any sort of environmental threshold that we say if a lake goes above this, it's too much and we need to dial it down?
Yes.
What's the top limit?
So there's different thresholds. So the EPA considers a chloride threshold of 230 milligrams per liter. So to put that in perspective, that's about one teaspoon of salt in a 5-gallon bucket. So it's very little salt to pollute this water.
So do you think that there's some kind of regulation needed, or does it happen at the civic level, where, as you said, we start to become more aware as citizens and as communities that we need to maybe dial it back a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think people have to be aware that, you know, we live in a state that has pretty harsh winters and have to be cognizant that we're going to have to deal with snow, and maybe, you know, instead of throwing down a lot of road salt, we might just, you know, drive more slowly during those months. But there are states that are looking into making citizens less liable for accidents that might take place on their property. And so right now, a lot of private contractors, you know, throw down extra road salt because it's cheaper than being sued. And some states, New Hampshire is a good example, that's becoming aware of this problem and trying to reduce the liability on citizens. And therefore, they might, you know, use less road salt as a result.
And I'm sure you've heard about this, too. We've heard about cheese brine being used to melt ice instead of salt. I understand sometimes there might be an odor associated. I've never smelled it or experienced it. But what about that? Is that an alternative that we should be putting more resources into?
Yeah, it's a great Wisconsin alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So cheese brine, I mean, some of these brine ideas are great, but they don't solve the problem of chloride runoff into lakes. So a lot of brines are made of chloride. It's just that cheese brine might be a free alternative, whereas you're not going out and buying road salt. So if cheese brine is dumped down the drain, it's going to end up in our lakes. We might as well put it on roads first, and then it's going to end up in the lakes. So trying to come up with alternatives that might not use as much salt in general, sort of better solutions.
Got a comment here from Rod on Facebook who wants to know, what is the effect on lakes from treated water from waste treatment that contains water softener salt?
Yeah, so water softener salt is definitely a large proportion of some of the chloride input into lakes. And Madison's a great example where there's a lot of private water softener use. And so that's going to have the exact same effect. Wastewater treatment plants can't remove salt from water. It's just too costly. And so if the lakes downstream from those water treatment plants are definitely going to have elevated chloride.
You said before that it was very laborious, maybe costly to remove salt from lakes. What is that process?
You're going to have to ask an engineer on that one. It's but if you think about desalinization mm-hmm. of ocean water, I mean, it's sort of a last resort when it comes to trying to create fresh water.
So it's not ideal to fix it from that end. You're saying let's get fixing it on the other end of the problem.
Yeah, so we just have to be cognizant of what we're putting down on the roads is it's going to end up in the water. And it might be, you know, this year, it might be decades from now. A lot of what we put down is actually stored in soils. So there's been some studies that have said that, you know, 70% of road salt that's put down on roads is actually stored in the soils nearby, and 30% of that runs off into lakes right away. And so even if we stopped applying road salt now, we probably wouldn't see the benefit of that for a few years, maybe a decade, before we really flush all that legacy salt out of the soil. So we've been salting roads since the 1940s, and so there's a lot of salt buildup in the environment. So, you know, part of that long-term monitoring is important because, we need to see when we're going to start seeing those results.
This is probably more of an engineering solution, but are there any sort of ideas that do come more from road design? For example, a grade of a road maybe tilts away from a lake instead of toward.
Yeah, and just, you know, how far away it is in general. So the bigger the buffer, the less impact you're going to have right away. I mean, again, you're going to store that salt in the soils, but it's not going to create, you know, really flashy inputs of chloride, say, during snowmelt.
So what's your takeaway? A lot of public citizens listening to this realizing it's not just city use. What do you want people to know as someone who studies this?
Yeah, I mean, I want people to know that there's a lot of work going on in this. You know, the city of Madison and other cities in Wisconsin and the state are well aware. There's a great resource that's been put together called Wisconsin Saltwise. So that's wisaltwise.com. And it has tons of resources on, you know, how salt's affecting both our drinking water and our environment and what you can do to sort of help.
Terrific. Hillary, thank you so much for coming in and joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Hillary Dugan, researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Limnology, talking about a recent study that she co-authored showing that road salt is increasing the salinity of our freshwater lakes and getting some ideas there about what to do about it.